Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome from the Media Research Center. It's another Newsbusters podcast. This one's not brought to you by any of those old sponsors of, I don't know, the Lawrence Welk Show, Philips Milk of Magnesia, Geritol, and Doane's Pills for your back. But the lead item today is the question, how would this whole mess in Afghanistan been covered if Donald Trump was still in office? I mean, I think we can look at the general and say, clearly a fiasco would have been doubled and tripled and quadrupled by the anti-Trump press. I think we can guess that. But let's do some specifics. Let's start with this. Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller was relieved of command after he posted a video online on Facebook questioning leaders' handling of the situation in Afghanistan. After the video was posted, Marine Corps spokesman Major Jim Stenger said in a statement, Scheller was relieved of command, quote, due to a loss of trust and confidence in his ability to command. Now, let's just imagine if the same thing happens under Trump. A lieutenant colonel is suddenly relieved of duty after criticizing the president or the administration. I think we could guess what would happen. He would be the biggest national hero since Alexander Vindman. Oh, yes, on his radio show today, Chris Plant said that. What about Alexander Vindman, who testified in the first impeachment trial? Lieutenant Colonel, who was a national security aide, he was a hero. He was completely honored. And he was just honored again in a round of book tour interviews. Well, clearly, Vindman was a partisan. He hated Trump. In 2020, Vindman and his wife, Rachel, appeared in an advertisement by the Lincoln Project, those disgusting never-Trumpers, supporting Biden's presidential campaign. So Vindman, you know, is a military man. He testified in uniform all the time. A military man called into the Chris Plant show to object to Scheller's tactics. He suggested you don't film a video like this in your uniform in your office. And that's where you think of Vindman again. But the irony is, military people often do this anonymously. If they want to object or dissent from the president, they don't do it in their office in their uniform. They do it in their office talking to a reporter. Somehow that is more professional. It's certainly a better way to keep your career going. You know, obviously there's a lot of leakers in the to the press of people who are thinking of their own career first, and they're not going to sabotage their career by being identified as the source of nasty negative quotes. Next up, the mother of a U.S. Marine killed in last Thursday's terrorist bombing outside Kabul's airport claimed that Americans who voted for Biden just killed my son. Kathy McCollum, whose 20-year-old son Riley was killed in the attack, talked to Andrew Wilkow on Sirius XM radio and said she blamed the dementia-ridden president for her son's death. That's pretty rough. Obviously, you can understand a grieving mother is going to be angry, certainly with the terrorist bombing. You hate the idea that you send your children into a war zone, especially in Afghanistan, where they really have not had casualties. This would be upsetting. And so we ask ourselves again, what would have happened under Trump? Or let's say this, under George W. Bush. Well, most of you could probably recall, under George W. Bush, Cindy Sheehan lost her son Casey in Iraq. And she went around from place to place calling George W. Bush a terrorist. And that was just treated as fabulous. Chris Matthews suggested she should run for Congress, until she actually looked at running for Congress against Nancy Pelosi, and then nobody liked her. The press would do this all over again if Trump was still president. This Kathy McCollum would be a national hero. She'd be on all kinds of talk shows running Trump down. In this case, let's try again. He's dementia-ridden. He needs the 25th Amendment. La, la, la. They would run with all of that stuff and enjoy it very much. Then there's the Biden watch gaffe at Dover Air Force Base. The older people will recall, in 1992, in one of the presidential debates, it was the town hall debate, George H.W. Bush made the mistake of looking at his watch to see what time it was. This would seem like a pretty innocent thing to do during a debate, to see how it's going and how much time you've got left. And it was treated as, oh, Bush can't stand debating. He doesn't like the people. And they turned it into a big gaffe about how terrible he was as a debater because he looked at his watch. Well, here's Joe Biden with 13 lost military people arriving in a military base, and he looks at his watch, and you could have done this whole routine with Biden. What, you're busy? You've got something else to do? I mean, the joke on Twitter was, is it ice cream time? Is it time for a nap? Well, of course, the press isn't going to do any of that stuff. But when it came to Dover Air Force Base, to go back to Riley McCollum for a second, Chris Plant again, I enjoyed his show today, he noted this from the Washington Post. One of Riley McCollum's sisters, Roy, said she and her sister and her father joined McCollum's wife, Jana, on the trip. But when it came time to meet with Biden, they left the room because they said they didn't want to speak with the man they held responsible for their relative's death. Only Jenna, the wife, who is expecting the couple's only child next month, stayed behind. But she left disappointed. The president brought up his son, Beau, according to her account, describing his son's military service and subsequent death from cancer. This guy can't go anywhere without discussing his heroic son, the lawyer who went to, you know, a war zone. He was not G.I. Joe. He was a lawyer, but he can't help but bring this up every time. Well, this didn't go over well with this family. The Post reports it struck the family as scripted and shallow, a conversation that lasted only a couple of minutes in total disregard to the loss of our Marine, said his sister. She added, you can't F up as bad as he did and say you're sorry. This did not need to happen, and every life is on his hands. See, I can see again where a grieving relative would feel this way. I often think that this is rough stuff, the way that you'll say every terrorist casualty is on a president. And the difference between this, again, is under Biden, that's considered rude. You don't ever suggest Biden's responsible for anyone's death. With Donald Trump, everyone who died in America was pretty much Donald Trump's fault. Certainly everybody who died of coronavirus. So you can just see these stories and see the dramatic difference in how they would approach them based on which one was president. Next up, let's look at David Rothkopf, a former Clinton administration official who later edited Foreign Policy magazine. That's a property owned by the Washington Post Company. Rothkopf wrote several urgent defenses of Biden's handling of Afghanistan, basically suggesting he was responsible for nothing. He treated it almost like it was a fact check. You know, Biden's critics are wrong. So he would take on these claims. Number one, Biden owns this. No, the authors of 20 years of war own this. The corrupt Afghan government and the Afghan military who stood down own this. The Trump administration that said the deadlines, drew down the troops, left behind the material, and released up to 5,000 Taliban prisoners owns this. See, isn't that shameless? Trump wasn't president when they left behind the material. Biden left behind the material. And, you know, Trump set some deadlines. That doesn't mean Biden couldn't have changed them all. And he basically did. I mean, that's just shameless. This is the kind of thing, Biden doesn't own this. The authors of 20 years of war own this. Well, Biden was vice president for the 8 years of Obama. We know he was involved in this decision-making process because he was always arguing like, he wanted out of Afghanistan under Obama. Okay, if you want to give him credit for that, he also thought we shouldn't go after Osama bin Laden. Biden's basically Jimmy Carter, the sequel. Some people like that. Anyway, the Rothkopf thing continues. Number two, well, at least he owns the chaos surrounding our exit. No, he says. There's no way that the Taliban regaining control would not have led to chaos. Well, see, this is a guy who's just desperately spinning. Just desperately saying, you can't blame Biden for anything. Why? Because I'm a Democrat and that's the way I feel about it. What made this a little comical is this energetic fighting the hard facts was tweeted out by Washington Post fact checker Glenn Kessler. Yes, it tells you where Kessler lives. As a longtime State Department reporter, he's as tilted toward the Democrats as his fellow postie Ann Gearin, who covered for Hillary Clinton there at the State Department back in those years, back in the Obama years. And she would always feel bad, like, oh, Benghazi was terrible. It's just, it weighs on Hillary, the poor dear. She's now at the White House covering Biden for the Post. All these people sound like Matthew Dowd. Do you hear this? On the Brian Williams show on Friday night, he just came out again trying to say, Biden's done yeoman's work in Afghanistan. And when it came to the Republicans, he sounded like the perfect Uber Democrat. He's like another James Carville, this time from Texas. He said, they've never let facts get in the way, the Republicans. They've never let facts get in the way of anything they've said or the principles of the Constitution or what we're supposed to stand for as values of our country. None of that gets in the way of what they do. Yes, Matthew Dowd, who is a speechwriter for Bush. You know, I think the worst thing you can say about George W. Bush is, you know, you don't have to agree with all of his policies. I think that a lot of them are controversial. And the whole question of whether to go to war in both places is something you can respectfully question. What I think is funny is that how he brought with him people from Texas to support him that have become so dramatically anti-Republican. You know, you could sort of start with Scott McClellan, who was his press secretary for a couple of years, and just within a couple of years, totally flipped on Bush. That sounds like, well, maybe you didn't bring the right person with you. Then there's Mark McKinnon. He had that strategist, who's routinely on The Morning Joe, or he's on this show, The Circus, on Showtime, always wearing his fancy hat. And then, of course, you've got Matthew Dowd, who now always has to wear his trucker hat when he goes on TV. They're all Texans, don't you know? Somehow, when you're a Texan and you hate Republicans, well, it makes more sense because you're a Texan. Whatever. Now it comes to Brian Stelter, and we all know how he's covered Trump with complete screaming panic. So it's not hard for us to imagine how would he be covering Trump now. He would suggest that Trump's response from Afghanistan, well, we're ready for impeachment 3. But again, this week, he went looking for liberals to hammer the press for being too tough on Biden. Wasn't Stelter supposed to be pro-press? What, didn't it used to be somehow an attack on the First Amendment to question anything the press did? But suddenly now, every week, Brian Stelter assembles a panel to say the press is terrible. I mean, Eric Bollert? Seriously? You're going to go find Eric Bollert. The guy wrote a book called Lapdogs, claiming George W. Bush was getting it too easy. And now he thinks Biden is getting it too rough? What planet does this guy live on? And of course, his case, Bollert said, well, the media were injecting too much drama into the Afghanistan story. Now he said, well, before the bombing. Obviously, the bombing has drama. Well, there was all kinds of drama before the bombing. Just people struggling to get out. There was all kinds of drama. There's so much drama that most reporters packed up and got on the next plane. Ask Clarissa Ward if there was drama. Then Stelter turned to James Fallows, who was a speechwriter for Jimmy Carter and later ran U.S. News and World Report magazine. He wrote a big book called Breaking the News that they all loved because it was a liberal critique of the press. Fallows said on the Stelter show, I think there's been a gross failure by the U.S. media. What an attack on the First Amendment! He was upset by the instant equation of the fall of Kabul with the fall of Saigon, which it has almost nothing in similar that is similar except for the pictures of helicopters. Well, look, they were both long investments by the Pentagon, by our government. I think you can make some connections there. You could say one was an anti-communist war, and Afghanistan was not an anti-communist war. But this is what happens now. Reliably pro-press has become reliably anti-press. We'd like to see, we wouldn't have seen this coming, but, you know, I think with Brian Stelter, we sort of knew that this was going to kind of come. I just think that we need to say, look, we here at Newsbusters are pro-reporting. We are in favor of journalism. We could joke right now that we think journalism right now under Biden is more important than ever. You know, the New York Times was like, the truth is more important now than ever. Well, when was ever? Does that logo, or does that slogan still apply now? Now that Biden's in office, the truth's suddenly less important. Democracy was dying in darkness. Now, not so much. Except they've always got that threat out there. Trump's still lurking out there. Democracy's still in danger. And it's got to be up to the Washington Post to save it. Now, the problem here is, as usual, the Washington Post isn't out to save democracy. They're out to save the bacon of the Democratic Party. It's what they've done. It's what they did during Watergate. It's what they've done ever since. And we are here at Newsbusters to call it out. So come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.